Covered, and there's a lot in the regulations, frankly, that help give examples of the joint employer and integrated enterprise. So if you're confused about that, I don't blame you, but you can go to the regulations under the Family Medical Leave Act, and it will provide a lot more detail about how that has been, how that applies. Okay, it covers employers, the covered employer must provide eligible employees with up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave each year to care for a newborn child or a newly placed adopted or foster child, to care for a spouse, child, or parent with a serious health condition, or because of the employee's own serious health condition. And then we also have military family leave for military that are active duty. And so what this does is it gives employees who are parents, spouses, or children of current members of armed forces, veterans, reservists, and National Guard, retirees, call-ups, up to 26 weeks of leave during a single 12-month period to care for a covered service member with a serious injury or illness. And how it works is if there is a qualifying exigency, the employee gets to take up to 12 weeks off. So that's what it does, how it works. That doesn't really make much sense. So the titles, nor the subtitles. One is to care for them for a serious injury or illness. The other is for qualifying exigency. Yeah, here are some examples. Let's say that a spouse gets called up and is going to be overseas for a considerable period of time. And they're going to have a meeting on base for all the family members to give them information about, you know, what's the best way to contact them, what are going to be the restrictions on contact, you know, how long they're going to be out, you know, how often they'll be given leave, you know, just answer questions that concerned family members might have. They want to attend it, that would qualify. If they want to meet with the school and talk about the impact that mom or dad being gone for 6 months might have, and they want to visit with the school counselor about being on the lookout for that, any concerns, then that would qualify. They need to make an appointment to get a will drafted. If they need to get counseling, if they need some time off to share the R&R with the service member when they're home. So anything that falls into these categories could be qualifying exigencies and entitle the employee to that leave under the FMLA Act. My view is if it looks, acts, or smells military, you're probably better off to give it. Now, if you want to be a stickler about it, you can look very closely at the regulations. But my general view is it doesn't come up that often, that you can probably afford to be generous because it really doesn't pay to get sued by anybody in the military because that doesn't sell to any jury. You treat the military or their families poorly and you're in trouble. So, benefits. A covered employer has to maintain the health coverage for employees on FMLA leave under the terms of any existing group health insurance plan that the person was already on. And you don't have to put them on it if they weren't before, but if they were on the plan, that has to continue. During FMLA, reinstatement. Covered employers must reinstate employees who are returning from leave, and you have to reinstate them to their same job or an equivalent position without the loss of benefits that had accrued prior to the start of FMLA leave. Now, equivalent position, I would say, to be conservative, interpret that as identical. So if I have 50 sales reps on the floor who answer questions and handle a particular state, right? Then they come back and Minnesota is no longer available, but I can give them Wisconsin. That's fine. I can do that. Now, however, if let's say Minnesota is a hot area, and so the person sitting at that desk makes three times the commission that the Wisconsin desk does, then I would argue that is not the same or similar job. It's not an equivalent position because the opportunity for income is very different. So it's got to be pretty darn close to the same job that you have to put them in upon their return. Now, if you've eliminated the job while they're out on leave, let's say you did a reduction in force and you eliminated everybody in this category or everybody at this facility or everybody in that department, then that's fine. Then their job has been eliminated. However, if you're picking and choosing, let's say I have 8 people who do software development and I'm going to have to do a reduction in force. So I'm only going to keep four of them. I can't automatically say, well, so-and-so's out on FMLA leave, so let's just assume she's not going to come back after her delivering the baby. So we'll go ahead and eliminate her position. That's not going to cut it. You're going to have to make the decision based on factors other than the FMLA leave. So that means going back and looking at performance records, ratings, disciplinary records to make the determination, you know, skill set going forward, what's going to be needed. So you're going to have to make a distinction, and it's going to have to be based on something other than the fact that they are on FMLA leave, because that would be illegal. Okay, the FMLA has a provision that prohibits retaliation. Oh, and if you have questions, feel free to put them in the chat room. Employers are prohibited from interfering with or denying FMLA rights and from discharging or discriminating against any person for opposing any practice made unlawful by the FMLA. So the interfering with or denying FMLA rights is something that is